I turned to the sports page, and the Mets had blown it in the 13th inning. Papers can't make losing look like winning. I think the Phillies took it 5-4. There it was on the sports page. Only page that takes a firm position. Kind of like an honest politician. The kind you hardly find anymore. In fact, let's face it, the sports page is the only place to go when a fella wants to know the score.
Not only a fella, you know what I'm saying? Not only a fella wants to know the score, there's a lot of ladies, women out there who want to know the score. Good morning, Fred and Kyle. How you guys doing?
Good morning. How are you
morning,
guys?
John.
I'm good. Just loving the snow. I've been rolling in it and stuff, trying to just get ready for the season. And I'm just wondering how the Gophers football game is going to go down there, if they're going to get a bunch of more snow. But where do you guys want to start? First of all, we lost a close personal friend, right? Kyle? Fred?
I'll let Fred lead on this one because I'm not old enough to remember Sid before he was in his later years.
Well, let me comment then. I wasn't a big fan of Hartman's friends. He befriended Steinbrenner and Knight and Holtz, three people with crazy extreme right-wing politics. But just think about this, what I'm going to say. Just listen to this list. Joe DiMaggio, Rocky Marciano, Joe Louis, Bill Russell, Willie Mays, Ted Williams, Jim Brown. All of them Hartman got personal interviews with.
Hmm.
He introduced Ted Williams to Bob Knight. So we're talking a different era, a zillion years ago. Dropped out of school, junior year in high school. I mean, a pauper. Folks had nothing. Immigrants, one from Latvia, one from Russia. Uneducated, didn't read, but nobody had the ability to make friends like he did. A great guy, I don't know about that, unique, of Minnesota. And, you know, his press thing says, the Baseball Writers Association, it says town number one or number one person. His friends have told me that his number one shame in his life, what he's most ashamed about, I want you guys to think about this, that with all his juice and influence, he could not get Jim Cotton to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Okay, that's a very good segue. I also have a couple Sid stories. Scott and I were trying, he had a book, and we were trying to set up an interview with him, and I called him on several occasions, and I'll just say is it wasn't pretty.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, he wasn't into courtesy or manners.
No. Okay, Fred, well, Kyle, we're going to go to Fred again, because I don't know if you were around when Kitty Cott was doing his thing, winning Golden Gloves and throwing pitches, but why isn't he in the Hall of Fame? Aren't there a lot of pitchers with a lot less wins than him than in the Hall of Fame?
16.
Holy.
That's all. 16 with fewer wins. One of the three greatest defensive fielding pitchers of all time. Great war numbers, great F numbers. Won 280-some games. 26 years. We could make a long list of people with fewer statistics. To me, it's a failure of the Minneapolis-St. Paul baseball writers. They just haven't had the juice or the influence to get them in. That's
would it be safe to say they didn't have the effort either? Because you'd think the effort would be there. What does it mean when a sports writer sports writers have a huge influence on the induction into Hall of Fame?
Yes, only the sports writers are voters for
that's who vote. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Nobody else gets a vote, and they do have committees of former players that are on that. Joe Morgan devoted his life to his post-baseball life to working in Cooperstown. Blylevin's involved in this. Rod Carew's involved with this. So I can't. That's one of the things I can't figure out. I mean, Scott Hall and I have been talking about this now for 30-some years on this show, why Cott's not in the Hall of Fame. He's not from the East or the West Coast, though we broadcast Yankee games for a few years, guys.
Yeah.
There's two main things that I think have hurt his candidacy. One is that he didn't strike out a lot of guys, and
that shouldn't
matter. But that's one of those kind of sexy stats that a lot of people look to when they think about how dominating a pitcher was. And, you know, in the modern era, striking out a batter per inning or better is kind of the standard. Cut struck out just over a batter every two innings. So he wasn't that kind of a pitcher. And he really, over the last 10 years of his career, not quite 10 years, but toward the end of his career, just kind of hung around, just won a handful of games a year. And I think that writers looked at that, too. And I think he should be in for what it's worth. I think he's kind of a good fringe candidate, but I also think he's going to, you know, as advanced, quote-unquote advanced statistics play more and more, the kind of things that helped Bert Blyleven get in, Kotz's WAR, his career wins above replacement total, is just over 50, and it'd be one of the lowest of any Hall of Fame player.
Still, because it might be season. With 100 fewer wins. You see, he's got 100 fewer wins, you know?
Yeah, I don't understand this guy needing to blow people away with strikeouts thing. I don't think that's proper. I mean,
I agree, John. I don't think it's right or the best way to look at it, but I think it's a factor.
That's like in the PGA, you know, somebody wins seven majors and they hit 10% of the fairways and, you know, things like that. I know you agree, but I just think that's crazy. I mean, you get that many wins, you're doing something right. And I'll guarantee you, the players on his team loved it because they weren't standing around bored in the outfield, in the infield.
Yeah, that's exactly right. As you guys mentioned, one of the best fielding pitchers in the history of the game.
Top three.
In totality, I think he probably ought to get in.
Those statistics that you're talking about, modern or advanced statistics, that's who says he's one of the three greatest fielding pitchers of all time. Cotton, Maddox, Gibson.
Yep, absolutely.
And in my opinion, we said this not that long ago, one of the best TV announcers there is as well. Beautiful.
And remember, John, this is a tip of a cap to you. Only person in the history of the planet to beat his age, both left-handed and right-handed, on the golf course.
Oh, my gosh. That's insane.
That's incredible.
Oh, all right. Whew, that got goosebumps. That's impossible. Okay.
That's right.
Let's talk about something. Let's just change gears a little bit before we go to football and the Vikings, et cetera. The Timberwolves. We finally get the number one draft choice. There's no stud out there. There's no dominant player. What on earth do they need? Fred, what do you think we need for that number one pick? A three-point shooter, I think.
I would start with that. Somebody who could catch the ball and shoot and that you have to guard at all times. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's where I would start with. More scoring from the perimeter.
Kyle?
But there's no doubt that they need a three-point shooter. They have been one of the worst teams from three-point range in the league for a decade. The problem is there isn't an elite three-point shooter that's going to be available in the top two picks. So the options for the number one pick are probably Anthony Edwards, who's a really, really good shooting guard from Georgia, but he's not a great three-point shooter yet. Now, sometimes guys can, you know, you get a little better coaching, work on your form, get more repetitions, you can improve that. But he shot less than 30% on three-pointers, if I remember right, in his time at Georgia. So they got him. LaMelo Ball, who's a point guard, and he's kind of like a giant Ricky Rubio, amazing passer, great court vision, kind of a broken jump shot. And then the rest of the presumptive top picks are a bunch of forwards and one center, James Wiseman from Memphis. So I agree with you guys that shooting is the top need, but if they go that route, they're almost certainly going to, I think, trade down and try to accumulate either another player or another first-round draft pick for the future to do it.
Yeah, and you mentioned
the Ball family's already announced we won't sign a long-term contract unless it's in California.
Oh boy, I think the dad has any influence there?
It's crazy.
He doesn't even deserve our conversation. And Kyle, you said a three-point shooter. He's not a three-point shooter yet. We need someone now, not yet.
Yeah, no, I agree. For my money, the guy I would look at, I think, is either Edwards, the guard from Georgia, or there's a less known player for those who don't follow college basketball closely named Obi Toppin. And the reason a lot of people may not know him, even though he was the Naismith Player of the Year last year, is he plays for the Dayton Flyers, you know, not one of the Power Conference big-name players, but he is an explosive power forward that I think they could probably pair pretty well with Karl-Anthony Towns. Might not do a ton to shore up their suspect defense, but boy, they'd be fun to watch on offense.
Okay, let's move on. Let's talk two things. First of all, let's address the Vikings. Horrible. Fred, you don't even need to talk. I know what you're going to say, offensive line, and you're absolutely correct. Yep. Absolutely correct.
So the offensive line needs help for sure, but the story for me is they have the worst secondary I have seen in memory. The offensive line is not the one that's given up 40 points a game.
Yeah.
They need help all over the place.
They're going with solid rookies, and we're talking a solid 6-foot cushion. 6-yard cushion. Teams can just pick away. I guess we just got to try and enjoy watching Jefferson catch some passes, and for God's sakes, I can't even look at Cousins when he walks out the field after throwing those interceptions. What are you doing?
I know he's a nice guy, but it's conceivable that the Wolves could fire Spielman, the general manager.
Yeah.
Draft mistakes, contract mistakes with Cousins. He could be gone.
And I think I told my friends that I thought Coach Zimmer would be gone the next day because I think he's losing him a little bit. But, yeah, we need defensive backs quickly. Gophers play Saturday night against Michigan, Little Brown Jug.
At home,
nobody knows anything what's going to happen. We don't know anything about college football.
And what does this mean that Fleck has not announced?
Yeah, I don't understand that.
Does that mean people are ill?
Yeah.
Is that what that means?
To me, it makes it sound like he's got a bunch of key players that are ill, but who knows? I don't understand that. Isn't there a universal rule?
Yes. You're supposed to announce it by 4 o'clock Tuesday. Yes, John, there is.
Jeez.
And of course, they got a national TV audience on the worst possible time, directly opposite Game 4 of the World Series.
Yeah, which we haven't mentioned, which is a lot of fun to watch.
Yes, it is.
Just don't give a forearm smash to your buddies after you hit a home run.
Tampa Bay's bullpen, that's like my dream for the Minnesota Twins for the future.
Yeah, we got to go, guys. Keep dreaming.
No trivia?
Oh, my gosh. What am I doing, John? Where is my phone? Yes, we got trivia. Talk amongst yourself, would you, for a second?
Hey, Kyle, the Rays have two people in their bullpen that were Twins castoffs in the minor leagues. Nick Anderson, and I can't think of the other guy's name.
Yep, that's right. And there's a kind of a neat statistic that they flashed in last night's game that the Rays had, I can't remember if it was a league record or a major league record, for the most different players to have a save in the season.
Oh, they did. I heard that. Yeah. Right. Yep. And like 13 or something, you know.
Yep. Unbelievable depth.
Okay, here we go. For the first time since 1944, the World Series is being played in one ballpark. Why were the games played in one park in 1944?
Well, Kyle, I'm assuming you don't know this. It's because the Cardinals played the St. Louis Browns, and they were the only team in the major leagues that both shared Sportsman's Park in St. Louis.
Oh. I did not know that. Very cool.
Has there ever been other recent teams that have shared a ballpark?
No.
I mean, can you
that I have for a season when they rebuilt Yankee Stadium, they played in Shea for 2 years. You know, they shared.
Yeah, okay.
You know, there's been that, but that's about all.
With the passing of Joe Morgan in his honor, here's some questions about the Hall of Fame second baseman. Since Joe Morgan was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 1990, the Veterans Committee has chosen 6 second basemen who played before 1970, including Tony Lazaria, Nelly Fox, Bill Mazeroski, Joe Gordon, and Frank Grant. Name the 4 second basemen the baseball writers have elected to the Hall of Fame since 1990.
Well, one for sure is Ryan Sandberg, a Cub.
Okay, yeah.
Did Craig Biggio go in as a second baseman?
Yes, you got that right.
Okay. John, I got one. Roberto Alomar.
You got it.
Great player.
And come on, we're missing one more.
Oh, man.
One of the best hitters of all time.
Oh, best hitter, second baseman.
Number 29.
You mean Rod Carew?
Yeah.
Oh,
okay,
sure.
All right, sure.
All right.
I was going to go with Chuck Knobloch.
Oh, boy. Between 1972 and 1978, Joe Morgan started seven straight All-Star games for the National League between 67 and 75. What Hall of Famer was the starting second baseman for the American League in eight of his first 9 years in the major leagues?
I assume Carew.
You got it. What Hall of Famer got his 3,000th hit, career hit against the Twins in 1985 versus Frank Viola?
I don't know. Eddie Murray?
Rod Carew.
Rod Carew.
I think this is a crew love fest.
That's good. Yeah. I'm on that boat.
Since 1900, only two Hall of Fame second basemen have had a single season batting average over 400. One was Napoleon
Lajoie
in 1901. The other hit over 400 three times in the 20s. Who was he?
Rogers Hornsby.
Yeah. Yep. Wow, good job, you guys. For Kyle and JB first. And see, this is tempting for me because all I have to do is scroll and I can see the answer, but I will not scroll. Hall of Fame pitcher and Michigan native John Schmoltz is a distant cousin to what other Michigan native and Detroit Tiger Hall of Fame second baseman?
Oh, I know I've heard this before.
No, it's, you can't,
yeah, I got a couple of guesses. Is it Charlie Gehringer?
Yeah.
Very good.
Wow.
Schmoltz got traded. That was one of the worst trades of all time. The Braves gave away, traded him, got him for somebody named Doyle Alexander.
All right, here for JB and Kyle, go first on this one. What 1977 inductee has the record for lowest strikeout rate in Major League history, striking out only once every 63 plate appearances? He played for Cleveland and the Yankees in the 20s and 30s and has a record for 115 consecutive games without a strikeout. No, I have no idea.
Oh, my goodness.
Sewell, S-E-W-E-L-L.
He struck out in 1932. He struck out three times in 503 at-bats and over 48 times over nine seasons.
That's impressive.
Think about this. In 1994, the year 1994, Tony Gwynn swung and missed at 34 pitches. Over 160 games.
Wow.
That's incredible.
This keeps going on.
I just described one at-bat for Miguel Sano.
Yeah, to put that into perspective, I just looked up Joe Sewell's stats. He struck out 114 times in a 14-year career. Miguel Sano struck out almost 100 times in a 60-game season.
John, in my lifetime, the guy that struck out the fewest, you mentioned him earlier, was Nelly Fox, a White Sox second baseman.
Mm. Joe Sewell made his major league debut with the Cleveland Indians during their championship season in 1920. He was called up in midseason that year as a result of what incident?
That's when Carl May's Yankee pitcher beamed and killed Ray Chapman.
Wow. Joe Sewell's cousin, Rip Sewell, pitched in the major leagues in the 30s and 40s and is credited with inventing what pitch?
The blooper ball.
Otherwise known as the Ephus.
Do you guys remember who threw at Ephus in our lifetimes? He was a big star in the 67-35 World Series.
I can see it.
You guys remember Spaceman Bill Lee?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do. How could you forget him? His Ephus was 25 feet high.
You can look up on YouTube in the World Series of 75, Tony Perez guessing right on an Ephus pitch, and it landed on the top of a building across the street from the
More recently, in my lifetime, there was a guy named Dave LaRoche, who was a pitcher who would occasionally break out the Ephus pitch.
All right, gentlemen, I'm exhausted. That was a lot of conversation, a lot of good stuff, though. See you next week, which will seem like 10 minutes. Bye-bye.